Good afternoon. It is finally a nice day. We had kind of a wild and woolly weekend. It was windy yesterday, too, wasn't it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was bad.
That voice, of course, is the one, the only, Chief Dean Rondo of the Wolfboro Police Department. Since yesterday, of course, was a holiday, we thought we would do this today. A couple of things we're going to talk about today. You all right? You look cold.
Pardon?
You look cold.
Oh, well, you know, I did 34 years in the Army, and a lot of that was Northern Warfare type of stuff.
Ah.
And I get frostbite on my fingers and toes. Yeah, so I do get chilled rather easily. If you've ever been frostbitten, you become susceptible.
Once. That was actually why I quit drinking.
Yeah.
It's a long story.
Sounds like a long, sad story.
the 10-second version is I went outside to throw up and passed out.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're like, where's Eric? He went outside. Yeah, like 2 hours ago, and I had some frostbite, and that was it. I swore off drinking after that.
Better. I've been frostbitten. So when the cold comes in,
I was gonna say it's pretty nice in here.
It's nice in here. Yeah. It's cold outside.
Yeah, I know, but it could be worse.
Could be worse. Yeah,
could be worse. All right. Well, let's get right to it. It's 12:04. Good afternoon, and two things today we were going to talk about. One of which is the role of school resource officers. Now, we've brushed up against it before, but we never really went into it. And my question, and please remember, it comes from, you know, a civilian who knows about as much about police work as I do about nuclear physics, other than what I watch on television. And you know how accurate that can be.
Don't push the red button.
Right, yeah. Not the pretty red button, you know.
Oh, you mean this one right here?
This one, oops. You know. But I was thinking to myself, you know, like they did with pilots, and they a certain number of pilots decided they were going to take the training and whatever and carry weapons in cockpits. I don't know how many pilots. Obviously, I'm sure that's a classified secret. But
I don't know either.
Well, it's the fact that no one's ever announced it tells me it's probably classified. But anyway, so why don't we do the same thing with teachers on a voluntary basis? And maybe we could save some money. However, from the look on your face, I don't think we're going to.
That's all right. It's a great question. And it's one that comes up from time to time. And I think, you know, folks are genuinely curious like you are. And so the first thing is, let's start off with the first question is, what is the role of the school resource officer? So the school resource officer is indeed a police officer. They're sworn full-time police officer. They're in this particular case, they're at the Kingswood Regional High School complex. So they're up there at that huge complex. They're armed. They have all the right tools and the equipment, and they're trained to use it. And we go through an awful lot of training throughout the course of a year, and that school resource officer goes through even more training throughout the course of a year. So their roles and responsibilities up at the schools, obviously, they're the safety and security piece that makes the district run efficiently, right? They're providing the security, the armed presence. They are an armed officer. They are a sworn police officer. And they can investigate crimes, and a lot of things do happen that need some sort of intervention, police intervention or school intervention or both, that occur every day at the high school. Now, I will tell you, years and years ago, when I first started here, 25 years ago, and so remember, 25 years ago, we didn't nearly have the school population that we have now.
True.
And I used to dread day shift. You know why? Because here's what I would do. I would come in. I would wash my cruiser. I'd throw my gear bag in the cruiser. And this is before we had a school resource officer. And the first place I'd head is Kingswood Regional High School, because I knew I was probably going to get a half a dozen calls. Everything from my car got backed into, or somebody punched me, or some other thing that is going to require a police presence. There were days back then that I never get off of South Main Street.
Now that's interesting, and let's go back to the ancient past, when I rode the school dinosaur to school.
Mm-hmm.
I went through 3 years of high school, never saw a police officer. I don't think we I don't even think anybody ever said, you know, I think we need a police officer.
Times
may have changed.
Yep, that's what I'm going to say. Times have changed, and that ship has sailed, and guess what, Eric? You ain't on it no more. And the other thing that has changed, too, right, along with the times, the population densities. So back when you and I, think about this, back when you and I were in middle school.
Late 1970s.
Late 70s, roughly, right? When you and I were in high school, the population of the United States, I want to say 1976, 1977, it's about 200 million, maybe a little bit north of that. And right now, what are we, somewhere between 310 million, 320 million?
Yeah, I've heard up as much as 330.
So in the period of about, what is that, 30 years?
Yeah, about that. A little more than that.
A little bit more than that. All right, call it 40 years, period of 40 years, whatever, approximately, right? We'll throw the old qualifier approximately in the mix.
Actually, it is 42 years.
Okay, 42 years. We have increased the population of the United States by over a third.
Yeah?
By over a third. So, and you really haven't greatly increased the number of officers in your major cities.
But we have decreased the number of children. At least, again, based on when I went to school, we had 28, 30 kids in the classroom, portable classrooms. My hometown of Peabody had 9 elementary schools. It now has 6. You know, that tells me that the child population is falling. They had 2 junior high schools. Now it's 1.
Okay, so that may be true, but your population density has still increased.
True.
And you're still dealing with all of those issues that go along with that. So
tell me what an SRO does. Does he have a list of things that he does every day?
So the SRO, again, is there for the safety and security of the students, faculty, and staff. They are a resource to the school administration in problem solving. They help get proper resources put in place should that aspect of it be required. They work very closely, obviously, with the juvenile services officers and the juvenile prosecutor and so forth and so on. They work with, obviously, the school administration in solving student issues. They take criminal reports and investigate things that come up throughout the course of the day to free up the patrol division to go out and properly conduct patrol operations throughout the town of Wolfboro.
I'm still stuck on the fact that, and again, it was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody had a fight or whatever, all right, you go that way, you go that way, that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a lot more complicated.
It is a lot more complicated. And
like I think going to school is more complicated.
And times have changed, and there's a lot of things that the school officials could do back then that they can't do now. You know, I remember growing up, and I went to an inner city school, for grammar school and middle school in Cambridge, Mass., and it was not beyond the school officials then to use force to break up fights.
Right.
I think you're going to find that the district isn't going to use force, right? They don't want to use force. That's not really something that is really permitted within the district. So read here, you know, who are you going to call? You know, things have changed and policies and procedures have evolved, whether you like it or not. And the other thing that's evolved too are values, and they've changed. And whereas the values that you describe, hey, you go this way, you go that way, knock it off, or, you know, back when we were kids, oftentimes we'd get in a fight, we duke it out and then shake hands afterwards, and now we're best of friends. That doesn't happen anymore.
No,
it doesn't happen anymore. So I think when I say times have changed, the complexities of how we deal with violence have changed. They've gotten worse, not gotten better. And when I say they've evolved, they haven't always evolved for the better. And I think that's what we're seeing. The other thing that we're seeing now in greater frequency are youth gangs and gang-like mentalities. And you see that. Remember, when we went to school, I don't remember the Bloods and the Crips, do you?
No, we had cliques, but not gangs.
But not gangs.
No.
Right. You don't have, yeah. So we have gangs in Rochester, for example. Okay. I mean, that's a fact. That's just a fact. All right. So things have really changed. And again, not necessarily for the better. And when the threat changes, right, you've got two choices. You can either modify your procedures to deal with the imposing threat or not and be caught flat-footed. And that's really where we stand right now. In 2019, we were seeing in 2019, before the COVID-19 pandemic hit, we were seeing a real uptick in active shooter situations and school shootings. This was something that obviously I'm very concerned about. So we have to do everything, I have to do everything that I possibly can to make sure that that complex is safe. School resource officers, in my opinion, are a really good thing.
It's just, those of us of a certain age, it's still kind of a mind blower, you know. You see school resource officer stories in the news or whatever. Is there a difference, I think, fundamentally between an SRO in a relatively affluent community like this one versus, say, Gary, Indiana?
I don't think so. You know, if done properly, it's an assignment. The officer gets an awful lot of additional training. Clearly putting the right officer up there, I use wholly volunteers.
Well, what I mean is that less affluent schools tend to be more multicultural.
Right.
Where, you know, this part of New Hampshire is overwhelmingly white.
I'm still not seeing your point.
It's not a point, it's a question. I'm just wondering if being an SRO is different when you're dealing with people who come from literally all over the world.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I don't think so.
Maybe I'm not fully understanding your question. I think being a police officer,
Well, let's try this. How much interaction does an SRO have with the average student?
Quite a bit.
Okay. Like what? I mean, besides saying, you know,
yeah, quite a bit.
Hello, officer.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of help do they provide?
Well, you know, there's all sorts of things. So, you know, take it from the top. If, you know, a student is acting up and to the point where the behavior is criminal, the SRO is going to get involved. The SRO is going to try to investigate that and determine what is causing this behavior, which is abnormal at this point in time. So there's going to be some interactions and so forth between the SRO and the student. Students that are facing challenges, life challenges, and so forth and so on, hopefully they will come and seek out that SRO, and the SRO will be paying attention to changes in student behaviors to help address some of these maybe non-criminal, but nonetheless very important challenges, and give the students some advice, guidance, and resources, places to go to help them with whatever issues are bothering them. Issues about drug addiction and alcohol usage and all sorts of very contemporary issues that young students and youth face every day. That's what they're up there. My SROs do interact with the student body, their coaches, their mentors, their teachers, their resources to other teachers. So they are very much part of that school community.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a heck of a job.
It is. You know, we talk about, it's almost the perfect balance between a police officer and a life counselor or a life coach. Right? This is what you really want. This is community policing at its finest. Okay, that it really is.
Does an SRO need a slightly different batch of qualifications as a patrol person?
Yes. Yeah, well, clearly, without a doubt. I think your best SROs are the ones that can connect with the children. So let's face it, you're not going to take, you know, somebody that's rough and gruff like me and put them in the high school and expect that they're going to be a very effective SRO. They may be able to do the job, but they may be, you know, they may be a bit standoffish, or the students may say, man, he looks a little mean. I don't think I'm going to talk to him. That being the case, sometimes the rough and gruff guys make the best SROs because they're just big teddy bears deep down inside anyway. So I think
he means himself, folks.
So the point is, you've got to have that desire to want to work with children and solve problems, work with the staff, teach them what they don't know. And help them understand what they don't know so they can better solve problems.
And, of course, they're always looking for the kind of violations that probably still happen in high school, smoking in the bathroom and that kind of thing,
and,
a fight or...
And we're under some... So just real quick, we've done... Yes, so obviously fighting is bad, right? We want... Right. Nobody should ever be afraid to go to school, right? That's the first thing I want to say here. And that was one of the reasons years ago I used to park up at the parking lot up there, 25 years ago. I didn't want any students feeling afraid to have to go to school. Let's face it, we all know the proverbial stories of the bullies, taking somebody's lunch money and so forth.
I lived it.
We don't want any of that. All that stuff is bad. We want to get back to a more traditional community policing role at the school, complex, where smoking things, sure, that is a violation of law, but we really want the administration to take a greater role in that. We see that as a larger school function as opposed to a criminal function. We're not afraid to get involved in something like that, and we have in the past, but I'm not necessarily sure we want to be writing kids tickets every day for smoking. But that should really be an administrative thing that's dealt with by the vice principal and his disciplinary staff. With that being said, we're there for the serious things that happen, whether it's possession of drugs or particularly violent assault or the safety and security piece. That's why we're there. We want to provide. Remember, if you look at my mission statement, we're providing a safe and secure environment. Right. That's what we're there for. That's really what we're there for.
It is WASR. I'm Eric Scott. He is Dean Rondo, Chief of the Wolfboro Police Department. I'm curious as to, you had mentioned the bullying aspect of school earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've come up with ways to change it, but it seems to me that when you go and report it, you make it worse, which sets up an interesting conundrum.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think I want to see these things reported.
Well, I hope not. I mean, it's been a while since I've been in school.
Well, things have changed too, and I think way back in the day, we were encouraged off a lot. If your school was like mine, we were encouraged a lot to solve our own problems. I remember, I was complaining. This is going back to when I was in grammar school, third or fourth grade. There was a bully I was having to deal with, unfortunately, and he had marked me as somebody he wanted to pick on. And I, my dad was away overseas fighting in Vietnam. I mentioned to my uncle, who was also had just returned from Vietnam, and my uncle said, "Well, just punch him in the face."
Right.
Right. So on the way home, the bully started bullying me. Got into fisticuffs with the lad, and never had a problem again. So, but not everybody, I think, is willing to do that, or comes from a family environment that would
encourage that.
It would encourage that, right? Because remember, what we're talking, I could see one side of the coin is, you're teaching your son or your child or your nephew to stand up for himself or herself, great, and then you got another family that's going to say, no, you're encouraging violence, this needs to stop. And so we all can agree that violence is bad, right? So I want to see bullying put to an end, right? I don't want to see that happen again. I go back to everybody should feel free and safe to go to school without any type of terror threat. And let's face it, bullying is bad. But back when you and I went to school, we were encouraged often to solve our own problems,
right,
which often, unfortunately, resulted in violence.
About 98% of the time.
And I'm reminded of a study of, unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the psychologist that did this. The study occurred in New York City. They brought in some middle school children from the inner city, and they put them through a series of problems without any coaching or mentorship. And the study was designed to try to get at, you know, school violence and what are the drivers of school violence. And in one of the very first scenarios they had, they'd given a candy bar to a student, to a young lad, and they said, okay, you get to keep this candy bar. This is your candy bar. We're going to put you in a scenario, and if you can hang on to that candy bar at the end, you can have it. And then what the other students, they went and they said, okay, we've given Johnny over here a candy bar, and your job is to get that candy bar from Johnny. And now, but they did tell Johnny one thing. If the student asks you for the candy bar, if you give it to him, we'll give you another one. So you get to keep that one.
Okay.
All right. But what they told the other students is, your job is to get the candy bar from Johnny. So the students would go in, and it would usually start with, hey, give me your candy bar. And Johnny would say, no, this is my candy bar. You get your own candy bar. And then the fight would begin. And they never instructed any of the students to say, ask, please, may I have your candy bar? If they were to say, please, may I have your candy bar? Please, can I have some of that candy bar? Johnny was instructed to go ahead and break it in half or give him the candy bar, whatever the case may be, and he would get another one. Of the number of scenarios that they ran, zero said, hey, Johnny, can we split the candy bar? Do you mind giving me a candy bar? Or words to that effect that have been a little bit more softer in approach as opposed to, hey, give me that candy bar, and then the fight begins. And that's a problem. That's a real problem, because what we're seeing in society is that students will take, or the youth will take what they think they can take, that they have a right to take. And that's wrong. That's the wrong message. That's what we don't want to, that is really a bad, that's a bad mindset.
I agree. But as our internal red flags tend to not come out to play, you know, we've seen too many things, like the thing at the Capitol last, you know, what, 2 weeks ago now, almost 2 weeks ago now, the Karen phenomenon, you know, calling the police on innocent people. It almost seems like civility is becoming a lost art, and children can't help but learn that.
Well, and I think you're answering some of your own questions now in regards to school resource officers. And I think you're absolutely correct. So when I say times have changed, they have. And you're right. Civility has become, in my opinion, a lost art, along with things like correspondence, written correspondence.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a whole nother discussion. But and now this is exactly the reason we have school resource officers, because I think civility has indeed become something that isn't as practiced as widely as it used to be. And couple that with the fact that we have increased the population density in this country by a little over a third. So all of these factors come into play. Now, I may not have done a necessarily good job of explaining what I read years ago about that study in inner city New York, but I think it's very apropos in the sense that children and youths do not have very good problem-solving skills. Their judgment centers are indeed still developing and not necessarily what they ought to be if they were 21 or 25. And that's one of the things that the school resource officer will help them make better decisions and coach them along, kind of like a life coach and a mentor, help bring them through that decision-making process. Not everybody, Eric, has been fortunate enough, or depending on your frame of reference, unfortunate enough to have the parents that you and I have had.
Right.
So, and I'll leave it at that. And that's what we're dealing with.
So the short story is it's a completely different world.
It's a completely different world. And we need to provide all of our citizens, to which includes our younger generations, mm-hmm. all the resources they need to be successful. And the programs, too, that you and I had as children, for one reason or another, I don't think are necessarily there anymore. Let's take a look at one that made a big difference in my life, was the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was a Boy Scout.
And I'm an Eagle Scout. Right?
Good for
and,
you.
And, yeah. And
congratulations.
And, yeah. Well, thank you.
That is, for those of you who don't know, that is not easy.
And I'm very proud of that. But boy, did I have a lot of help getting to that lofty rank in the Boy Scouts. And that's kind of like what the SRO does. They're that life coach, that mentor that's going to bring these kids through a lot of different, you know, over or through a lot of different hurdles, one way or the other. You're going under it, over it, or through it, right? And that's what they do. And so the Boy Scouts made a huge impact on me early on. And it was probably one of the reasons why I went in the military, you know, looking for that camaraderie and that esprit de corps and that teamwork and all those experiences that I had. And I had a wonderful time in the Boy Scouts, learned how to do all sorts of things in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, you really did. It's too bad I've forgotten half of them. But, you know, knots and things, and I learned about learned a lot about photography.
Yep.
I learned a lot about climate at yep. the time and, mm-hmm. and how things grow. And
yep, there's a weather, there's a gardening merit yeah, badge, there's a weather merit badge.
There's yeah, a merit badge for getting there, everything.
I learned how to water ski, I learned how to row a rowboat, sail.
Yeah,
I learned how to canoe, yeah. scuba dive, skydive, mountain climb, wilderness survival, swimming, lifeguarding.
You had a better troop than I did.
Well, I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Yeah, we did. I was in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now you got to remember the time. Cambridge, Massachusetts, big city, lots of money.
Yeah.
We didn't have one troop. We had about 25 troops in the district. We had the city of Cambridge owned three separate Boy Scout camps.
My God.
And remember, this is right around the time of the end of the Vietnam War, right? We were not too far from Fort Devens. We're 40 minutes to the south of Fort Devens. So we had all these Green Berets that were scout masters and assistant scout masters and troop leaders and so forth and so on. So, yeah. So I learned how to shoot. I learned yep. archery.
Yep. They taught me how to shoot.
Yeah. Yep. And learned horseback riding. And Western. We didn't ride English. We rode Western. You know, no self-respecting Boy Scout rides English.
I'm not even sure what that is.
So two different types of saddles.
I'm allergic to horses.
So are you really? Yeah. Okay, so English. So if you're a big horse aficionado like my cousin Michelle is, she rode English, right? So that's the proper way. You're going to do little jumps over fences. Now, Boy Scouts ride Western, right? We put the Western saddle on. You're not prancing up and down in the saddle. You're riding Western, you know, like a cowboy, like Teddy Roosevelt in a Rough Riders.
Well, my father was my scoutmaster, actually.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. But we used to play poker a lot on camping trips.
Yeah. yeah.
Especially when it rained. It was like nothing else to do.
Well, there is that, right? Yeah. So you learn, you got the poker merit badge. I'm just kidding, folks. There is no poker merit badge. Yeah.
Or you'd go out in the forest and play flashlight tag.
Yeah, we did that, yeah.
And some idiot would always sprain an ankle.
Yeah, or you'd walk into a tree or something.
Yeah, it's not a safe game, folks.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. No, we did all sorts of stuff like that. But we, you know, and later I was in the Explorers and I was in a high adventure post. And so we did, you know, it was funny, you know, the Boy Scouts was doing the extreme sports long before there was even a term for extreme sports. But in any event, I digress. The point is that that program and the youth leaders made a big difference in my life. Now, we're not going to run a program like that out of the Wolfboro PD. I'm not resourced for it. But what we can do is provide a resource to the school to help these students with some of their life challenges. And that's a big function of what the SRO does. It's a really good program. Okay. Really
Maybe
good program.
Maybe we should have him or her in. I realize they're based at the school, but...
Sure.
Maybe we can make that happen.
We can make that happen sometime.
I think that would be great.
Yeah.
All right. 12:32 here on WASR, and we're going to switch gears a little bit. As you know, tomorrow is a very big day. You could almost call it Super Bowl Sunday for those of the law enforcement community, especially the National Guard in Washington. Let's start with that. With crowd control. Crowds are nothing new.
No.
We have inaugurations, we have state funerals, we have, you know, the Pope having mass in St. Peter's Basilica with 60,000 people in it. We have Patriots games, we have Meadowbrook concerts, you know, 9,000 people. It's still a lot of people that, you know, what is it? Crowd control is its own specialty.
It is. It is indeed, yes. And remember, the Pope has the Swiss Guards.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But still, I'm sure there's, and I'm sure they're perfectly good guards.
Oh, they're awesome. So the Swiss Guards are the organization, law enforcement organization that protects the Pope.
So kind of like the Secret Service.
Kind of like the Secret Service for the Pope.
Okay.
That's exactly what they are.
I didn't even know the Pope had security. I thought the...
The Pope has security.
Well, I mean, I thought Rome did it.
No.
Oh,
no, he has the Swiss Guards.
He has his own guards.
The Swiss Guards.
So tell me a little bit about the objective of crowd control. It sounds simple. Well, duh, to keep them in control.
So,
but there's got to be more than that.
So the term that you're looking for is it's really not crowd control per se. It's population resource control. Okay. So what you're doing
that
is...
It sounds like Soylent Green.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Population resource control.
Yes, it does. Great movie, by the way.
Yes, I loved it.
Yeah. So I still remember the end scene with Charlton Heston being carried away. People are Soylent Green. It's people. Yeah, that's right. So go watch the movie, folks.
Soylent Green, 1973. Rent it today.
Yeah. It's probably not on Netflix, right?
Actually, I think it was.
It was just
a couple of months ago.
That should be coming up for a remake. All the other great movies are. All right, so getting back to sure. So what you got to do is you're trying to basically. So let's back up. You know, why are we at this point? Well, first of all, a presidential inauguration is going to be tight security to begin with anyway.
Right.
But you just had, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people storm the Capitol. And which was absolutely reprehensible. That was reprehensible. We live in the United States of America. Rule of law must remain supreme. I get the fact that some people are upset over perceived injustices.
Sure.
Okay. You got to raise those perceived injustices to your elected officials or to law enforcement, and they need to be investigated. You don't take matters into your own hands, and you don't storm the Capitol. You don't cause damage. You don't harm people. You certainly don't fight with law enforcement because, that's not the American way. It's un-American. The interruption of Congress during an official function is obstruction of government, right? There are laws against that, so you don't do that. Now, I know what some people are going to say. Earlier in the summer, we had the same problems in Seattle and Minnesota, and indeed we did, all right? And that wasn't right either. Everything that happened, that, you know, the burning of cities and the torching of police cars and the assaulting of people and police officers and burning of courtrooms and so forth, that happened all across the country, yeah, that was wrong too. So everybody's wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. Everybody's wrong. Get over it. But because of that, because of somebody thought it would be a good idea to storm the Capitol, well, they were wrong. And now you're going to see, the unintended consequence of that is that not only is there going to be security, but there's going to be exceedingly tight security. And remember, presidential inauguration was already tight security to begin with. Now it's just been screwed down by a factor of about 10. So last count I saw, there were 25,000 National Guard troops in Washington, D.C. Now let's talk about that. So this is what people don't understand, right? We talked about this before, the difference between Title 10, right, which is what I was under, Title 10, right, which was federal, and now Title 11 and Title 23, which is call up in the National Guard. Right? National Guard in this role have a law enforcement function, as you so pointed out. And that function actually is not going to be as compassionate as it would if it were, say, the Virginia State Police or the Maryland State Police maintaining control, okay? Because no matter how we look at it, the National Guard are military, right? They are a military. They are a branch of the military. They're a component of the Army, right? In this particular case, a component of the Army. All right, the Army National Guard is a component of the United States Army, right? U.S. Army has three components. It has the active component, the reserve component, and the National Guard component, right? Those are the three components that comprise the United States Army. So they are soldiers, okay? They're not necessarily, even though they're the only branch, really the only branch of the military that gets trained in civil disturbance, right? They have that training. They're not law enforcement officers per se, meaning they're not graduates of a police academy. They don't necessarily have individual law enforcement powers. They do under a governor. I mean, they can make an arrest. Now they can, because they've been those are the missions under which they've been called back to active duty. But generally speaking, that's not what they do. They're trained soldiers, right? And what's the job of the United States Army? To fight and win America's wars, right? So I've always said, right from the very beginning, I was saying this when I was in Iraq, the last people we want training Iraqi police officers are military. You don't want the military training Iraqi police officers to maintain civilian laws, because that's not what they do. That's not what the U.S. Army does, right? We have a completely different role and mission. The last thing you ever want is the United States military policing a civilian population. You don't want that. In this particular case, it's temporary. It's for security, and it's to make sure that the same misfits that stormed the Capitol don't do it again. But if you're upset or bothered by this, you should have been equally as upset and bothered by the misfits that were trying to overrun the Capitol.
I mean, to be fair, most people were.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think this you know, whoever thought it was a good idea, this really backfired.
Oh boy, did it ever!
And it was not, you know, this was not good. It's not even close to being considered good. And now we're dealing with 25,000. You'd think of 25,000. That's a division. That is a huge number of soldiers under arms. Huge.
Yes, but when you've got 200,000 people.
Right, exactly. Exactly. No, I get it. I totally get it.
It could be more than that. Inauguration.
I get it. Yeah, I don't know if anybody's really going to the inauguration. I don't know if you can get in.
I heard that the National Mall was closed.
Yeah.
I think it was Friday. And I was like, wow, it's never been closed.
I don't know if you can get in. And you know what? In the time of COVID-19, I'm not sure I would want to be going to something like that anyway, only because of the viral threat has increased.
Yeah, true.
But, it's too bad that we have to get to this point in our nation's history. It's just too bad. But at the same time, please believe me, I don't think that I certainly would, if I were the chief of police or if I were the mayor of Washington, D.C., I'd be doing the exact same thing. They have got a greater responsibility to maintain law and order, and I think they have to.
Well, maybe, and this seems like it's coming out of left field, but it's not once I kind of set it up. As we were talking about law enforcement and their mission, and military law enforcement and their mission. So I hear the word Benghazi thrown around a lot. Some of us don't really know what to believe. There was, of course, Ms. Clinton's version, and there was the people on the rights version. Maybe you can kind of put it into English for us.
In terms of
what exactly happened.
So that's a really good question. I really don't know, although I was in the service at the time when the situation in Benghazi occurred. And, of course, we're talking about Ambassador Stevens and the four other Americans that were killed, that were murdered. I don't know. I don't think there's ever fully been an accounting of what happened. Okay. I have my thoughts as to what happened, but I'm not going to share those on the air because they're thoughts, and I don't want to add any fuel to anyone's particular fire one way or the other. I don't know.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I really wish I did. But yeah, so it was really Ambassador Stevens was a very, very good ambassador.
That's what I've been told. I mean, yeah. I don't know much about him, but those people were well-liked, and it is a shame that they had to lose their lives based on whatever happened. A lot of people are blaming Mrs. Clinton. I don't know enough to agree with that or not.
I'm not sure, what really happened. I do know. I don't think there's ever really fully been an account. Well, certainly there hasn't been an accounting that has ever satisfied me. And I'll just leave it at that. And there are too many unanswered questions.
Sure. All right, well, you are the Secret Service. I'm sure they've probably war-gamed what would happen if all of those people on, let's assume that they're on the mall and it's a regular inauguration, and there's hundreds of thousands of people. They must have war-gamed what happens when something pops them off.
I think they have, between the Secret Service and the FBI, they have incredible resources that are obviously in a situation like this that are brought into play. So I think that they have a really good handle on the situation. I think the 25,000 added troops are really going to lock down the city and control the population and control the resources moving in and out of that area. So I'm not anticipating any issues. I will tell you that if somebody does go there with the intent to cause harm, and they themselves are arrested or something bad happens to them, well, they ask for it. Okay, it really is one. If with the level of security and the added troops that they have there. You would be foolish to go there with the intent of causing a disruption.
I agree. Plus, there's cameras everywhere. Delta Airlines actually forbade the carrying, not the carrying, but the checking of into baggage of handguns until this was over because they don't want people. And I understand that because they don't ask to see if you have a license for that particular jurisdiction. I've flown with handguns before. You have to, for those of you who don't know, you have to check them at the ticket counter. And then you have to go to another counter when you land and pick up your weapon. I'm sure you've been through it.
Yeah.
And it's a pain in the butt, but I understand why they do it. But my permit isn't good in Washington. I have three permits, and none of them are good in Washington.
Yeah. So, again, I would go back, and I know what someone's going to say. I have a constitutional right. Look.
No, you don't.
all I would say is, look, sometimes discretion can be the better part of valor. Just stay away, Watching on TV
like the rest of us,
and be happy you're not there. At some point we'll get through all this. We'll do it together and we'll do it as a team. And I, like I've long said, compromise is good. Everybody on the far right and the far left need to take off their tin hats, and we need to come to the table, have a cup of coffee, or a beer, and talk about these things like rational human beings.
Yeah. And that reminds me, speaking of which, in the Granite State News, Coffee with a Cop?
Yep. Yeah, Coffee and Connection.
Yeah. How'd that go?
It's going great.
Yeah?
Yeah, come on down.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we do Coffee and Connections with the Chief, where you can be on community TV. We can discuss relevant issues of the day, much like we do here. We reach out, obviously, and talk to, you know, there's a different audience that, that Wolfboro Community TV is reaching out to. Mm-hmm. We talk about whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about Fourth Amendment issues, First Amendment issues. You want to talk about the New England Patriots, whatever.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's a hoot. And we have a cup of coffee, and we from time to time, we get people asking different questions about different things and discussion. It's designed to be like this is, a give-and-take conversation where we get issues, you know, thrown around, and we discuss and solve all the world's problems in 50 minutes.
Well, it's important that, you know, people, I think, understand, yes, and, you know, law enforcement and where they're coming from.
Because, I had a,
you know, it's different. Civilians in law enforcement kind of live in different worlds.
I had a friend of a friend who's very liberal, and she and I were having an interaction on Facebook, and we came together toward the end after, you know, she's got her far left opinion, I've got my far right opinion, and we kind of joined in the middle after discussing the issues back and forth. And I said, you know, and we were talking, she said, oh, thank you for clearing that out. I said, listen, the important thing is not that you're on the left and I'm on the right or vice versa. The important thing is, the really important thing is we had a discussion and we came away in the middle.
Right.
Sometimes that middle might be a little bit left of center, a little bit right of center, but that's how things get solved. That's how things get solved in government. And I think that's a lot of what we're missing. You know, the drawing of the line in the sand and saying, no, you know, my position is this. No, my position is that. That doesn't serve the American people well at all, in my opinion. Okay? There's got to be some give and take and some quid pro quo, if you will, back and forth. That's how things get advanced. That's how ideas come forward. That's how solutions, you know, collaboration on really big issues. We get some big issues that we need to solve. They're all solvable. They're all very solvable.
If we wanted to.
Yeah, they're all solvable.
What I find funny is that, you know, we, as you say, there are people hard to the left and there are people hard to the right. But I don't, wouldn't everybody have a chance of getting things done if they said, okay, where's our common ground?
I think so. And, you know, what is it that we, you know, so here's what has to happen, right? There's got to be a leader emerge on the left. There's got to be a leader to emerge on the right. And don't somebody say, well, we already have. No, you don't. You got talking mouthpieces, but you don't have leaders.
Right.
And a leader says, okay, what are the objectives? What do we want to accomplish? What, you know, what does the president need done? What do the American people need done? What's in the best interest of the American people? And let's throw this all in the pot. Let's develop some priorities. All right, mm-hmm. And then let's work on the first three priorities. And once those get solved, let's work on the second set of three priorities. You can do it any number of different ways. But the important thing is we advance government in the best interest of the American people, right? Not the American Democrats, not the American Republicans, but the American people. That's what we need to do. That's what government does. And that's why we live in a society, a constitutional republic like we have right now. And unfortunately, I don't see a lot of that. I don't see a lot of interest in that. I see a lot of partisan politics being played out, and people are interested in their own particular dogma. And I think that's really bad. I think that's really wrong. And I think we need to say, what, in the words of John F. Kennedy, you know, I don't want the Republican answer. I don't want the Democratic answer. I want the answer that's right for the American people.
Okay, makes sense. 12:51, you are listening to Chief Rondo, of course, the Wolfboro PD on WASR. Thanks for listening. If you want to get a call in, that's fine, 569-LAKE. That's 569-5253. This program note later on tonight or this afternoon, Mike and the Hoss live with local and national sports talk at 4:30 here on WASR. So, let's kind of shift gears a minute again, mm-hmm. From the, you know, inauguration, that kind of crowd control, to local crowd control. Obviously, in the summer, it gets rather busy.
It does, yeah.
There are officers that are downtown. I've seen them on foot and on bicycles this past summer.
Yeah, we did the best we could. We took some budget hits early on that really, I had some plans in place to really ramp up the downtown presence, and unfortunately, that didn't occur.
I'm sorry to hear that. Are there a lot of problems generated by, in other words, do those officers make a lot more arrests than normal?
It's not necessarily...
Or citations?
Yeah, it's not necessarily more arrests or more citations. It's facilitating things like local ordinances. It's facilitating traffic movement. It's responding to calls for service in a more efficient manner because they're already there. It's dealing with quality of life issues that pop up, whether it's parking, whether it's, you know, dogs running loose on the Bridge Falls path or something like that, that typically would come into the Wolfboro Police Department. And remember, and I say this, and I'm ripping this line off from the X-Files here. It's not Silence of the Lambs, but it's what we do, right? So we respond to quality of life issues. Yes, barking dogs and dogs running loose are some of the more typical quality of life type issues that we see. Complaints about illegal dumping and trash in some of our parks and waterways and so forth and so on. Those are real quality of life issues, and yes, they are against the law. And yes, we will investigate those.
Okay.
So yeah, we do it all.
Now, when does the downtown patrol start?
That's a great question. We'd like to start them as soon as we can. This year, this past year, we couldn't start them. We wanted to start them on or about 1 June, but we couldn't because we took some budget hits from the budget committee early on in 2020. Actually, December 30th. 2019, I took a fairly significant cut in my budget and from the budget committee, and that really that hurt, along with some other unexpected financial shortfalls that occurred throughout the course of the year.
Are there motorcycle police in Wolfboro?
No.
No, there aren't.
No. Okay. No, we don't have any motor. I know what you meant. You meant, when you say motorcycle police, you meant a motorcycle-mounted officer.
Yes.
Yes, a motorcycle patrol.
Like,
no,
like
we
Chips.
Yeah, no, like Chips. No, we don't have that. And I'll tell you right now, we never will.
Oh, okay. Is there a particular reason?
Yeah, because I think motorcycles are dangerous.
Oh. Well, now, I own one, and I'm still here.
You are. You're lucky.
I love motorcycles. I do, though. It is 12:55. We have a few minutes left with Chief Rondo, the Wolfboro Police Department. If you want to get in, 569-5253, 569-LAKE. Based on your storehouse of knowledge and experience, do you think tomorrow is going to be relatively peaceful?
I do. I think tomorrow is going to be peaceful.
I mean, how much of this has been blown out of proportion by the news networks?
Well, admittedly, I mean, let's face it. There, you know, we there's always going to be some embellishment in the news media, whether it's left or right. Clearly, what happened in the nation's capital was wrong. Also, clearly, what happened earlier in the summer in places like Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Seattle, Washington, and Oregon was wrong too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other places, Philadelphia and Boston and some of the other major cities, that was wrong too. You know, in spite of Governor Cuomo that said, show me where it says that a protest has to be peaceful. Yeah, in the U.S. Constitution, Governor. Read the Constitution, right? Mm-hmm. So, let's not incite violence, right? And there were some on the left. Admittedly, I remember seeing Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Walters and others inciting violence, inciting protests. And I know you know people are going to poke me in the eye for saying that, but that's the way it came across to me. And so everybody here, there's plenty of blame to go around. There's plenty of blame to go around. You know, politicians shouldn't be inciting violence, and people should not be taking the bait and doing that. What happened at the nation's capital was wrong. There's no way to justify it. There is zero way to justify it. Just like there's zero way to justify what happened in Seattle or Oregon or any other place. Okay. You don't burn and loot and murder people. You just don't do that, no matter how righteous you think your cause is. That's just wrong.
Well, I'm just curious. Obviously, we don't have somebody from who was involved in the protest, but some people actually believe that it's going to make a difference. And this is the part I don't understand, is how can someone be that deluded?
I don't know. I really don't know. I saw some, and again, I don't know the veracity of this because I didn't research the source, but I saw a news feed come across my Facebook last week that said something about, you know, some of the protesters who have been charged or seeking a pardon because they were only doing what the president asked us to do. And I don't know if that's true or not, but even if it is, let's assume that that is indeed true. Okay. That would be an illegal order, right? And you have to be, and this is where I would say, no, what you did was a crime. If you broke into the Capitol, you broke into the chamber of the Congress, and you vandalized, you defaced, you obstructed government, you did all these things, okay, and you got caught, but you should be prosecuted. Okay, you should be held accountable for your bad acts, because you have to be bright enough. A citizen of this United States has to be bright enough to understand that you don't follow illegal orders, right? And what they're trying to claim by, oh, we're only doing what we were told to. No, that's the Nuremberg defense. That didn't work for the Nazis in World War II, and it shouldn't work now. Okay. And so let's if you don't know what the Nuremberg defense is, the Nuremberg defense is what the Nazis that survived World War II, when they were captured, they were put on trial in military tribunals. Now, a lot of them were hung. A couple were shot by firing squad, but a lot of them were hung. And their defense was really saying, "Oh, we were just following orders. We were doing what we were told to do." Well, those were illegal orders. And
well, there were some acquittals too.
There were some acquittals, and there were some not guilties in there, and so forth and so on. But by and large, a lot of these Nazis were hung. A couple of them were shot. But the point is, you have an ethical and moral obligation to not obey an illegal order, and everything that happened in the Capitol. As near as I can tell, with the people storming the Capitol, with the Congress, that was a riot. There's a word for that. It's called riot. Other words like sedition and insurrection may also apply. Those are legal terms.
Right.
I'm going to stay south of that because I don't know, admittedly, all the facts.
Right.
Those are legal terms. So when people say, "Well, it was treason, it was sedition, it was insurrection," maybe.
Well, we'll let the lawyers straighten that out.
Yeah, that that gets to when people say, "Well, what do you mean, maybe?" No, it is. I looked up the definition in the dictionary. Well, yeah, that's a dictionary. That's a dictionary definition. That may not be the definition that's in the United States Code.
Right.
So you have to follow the elements of the offense, and we've had this discussion. Every offense has certain elements that have to be met, and
mm-hmm.
But certainly we have riots, certainly have criminal trespass, certainly have disorderly conduct and criminal and assault and so forth, and all of these are at the felony level. So there's plenty of charges here. We're not short on charges.
Well, we will find out just about 23 hours from now, as President-elect Biden takes the oath Vice President-elect Kamala Harris take the oath of office. It should be, if nothing else, interesting, and usually is. As always, Chief, we are out of time, but a fantastic talk. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. And as you know, Chief will be back again with us on Monday. 1 o'clock, news is next.